we've really doubled down in the last 12 or 18 months around AI for all, because I think it's a recognition that it's going to be an integral part of our lives, both in the business world or when we're working and also when we're living on the personal side.
Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast, where AI meets leadership. And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we delve deep into the world of Chief AI Officers, exploring their journeys, insights, and challenges in steering AI initiatives within their organizations. Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we delve deep into the world of Chief AI Officers, exploring their journeys, insights, and challenges in steering AI initiatives within their organizations. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have a distinguished guest with us, Arthur Hu. Arthur is the Global CIO and Technology and Delivery Officer for Solutions and Services of Lenovo. Art, welcome to the CIO Podcast.
Sanjay, hello. Great to be here, and thanks for having me.
Well, Art, for our global audience, can you please tell them a little bit about your brief career journey and some idea of who Lenovo is, because most of the people just think, hey, it's the laptop on their desk, but it's a lot more. And then talk a little bit about your current role at Lenovo.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Sanjay. So Lenovo is a global technology provider. And much to your point, we do way more than just laptops. Of course, everybody knows about the ThinkPads and we're very proud of them. But we really today have moved well beyond that. We have also a full, what we like to call pocket to cloud portfolio, which means client, edge, cloud, networking, intelligence, as well as solution and services. We're about $60 billion and we run in all the countries around the world as a true global organization. So that's very briefly to give a sense of where Lenovo is today. For myself, I'm currently, as you mentioned, the Chief Information Officer globally, and it's been an interesting path. Right. My parents were both in the technology field, and this really gave me kind of an intrinsic interest, right? It just kind of clicked with me. And I really started working in technology right after I graduated. And I was fortunate enough that I was able to work both in the US and China and Europe in pursuing technology and opportunities at the intersection of business and technology. So I spent some time as a consultant at McKinsey & Company before joining Lenovo. And when I joined Lenovo, it really was during a time of globalization for the company. And so over the years, I've been here now almost 15 years, we've gone through phases of globalization, moving from a PC company into a server and mobility company, and now really into a full-fledged IT services company. Right? And then finally, I've got two hats on, right, as of today. As Lenovo's global CIO, I lead the enterprise-wide IT organization. That really provides the information services. We manage our daily operational systems, including the hybrid cloud and the business application portfolio. And we're really driving the transformation roadmap that's technology enabled for the company. So that's role one. Role two, I'm the Chief Technology and Delivery Officer for the Solution and Services Group. And there I lead the organization that delivers to our customers 24/7 every day of the year around our support services, managed services, and industry solutions. So I tried to give you a brief and concise overview, hopefully, about both the company and kind of where I'm coming from.
Well, that's very helpful. I have to say, a $60 billion company, it's probably one of the best kept secrets in the world. And it, as you said, goes from pocket to client across the board. And that's fantastic. And these are exciting times for you and for Lenovo. Lenovo has been at the forefront of AI adoption and innovation. And can you talk and let our audience know some of the key focus areas for Lenovo as far as AI is concerned? And how does it contribute to the company's overall AI strategy?
Yeah, certainly. We've had the slogan for a number of years, which has really been about smarter technology for all. We've really doubled down in the last 12 or 18 months around AI for all, because I think it's a recognition that it's going to be an integral part of our lives, both in the business world or when we're working and also when we're living on the personal side. And so really Lenovo tries to embrace that. And we've put AI at the center of our strategy because there's personal aspects of AI, there's private aspects of AI, and there's also public AI. And we think all of those are going to be necessary. we call this the hybrid AI approach, and that's contributing to Lenovo's overall strategy around it, because we're driving AI first and foremost to enhance the functionality and competitiveness of all of our offerings, whether that's a device or that's a service that we're creating. We're also using AI to help accelerate innovation and landing that for our customers in various industry, from things as diverse as healthcare and climate modeling, all the way through to smart park management and smart building management. So there's a huge breadth of things that we're doing there. And of course, at the forefront, we want to make sure that we are proponents and also practitioners of both the ethical and responsible AI. And so those elements come together. And I think when we're speaking with customers now, that story really resonates because it's helping us bring together all what these elements that we're calling new IT. And how do we take and remix and provide building blocks around the client, the edge, the network, the cloud, and tie that together with intelligence for our customers? And so, Sanjay, we've really brought it to the forefront, not because of technology's sake, but because it's a really valuable way to both capture and reflect customer interest and integrate the solutions that they need.
Well, that's fantastic. It's a fairly comprehensive viewpoint. Is Lenovo, I recently saw Microsoft announce some of the Snapdragon chips with their machines, and they said that's going to change that. And now you also have a lot of talk about how there'll be AI on your phone, you know, Samsung and others are doing. So tell our audience a little bit in terms of Dell's got this big AI bump, so to speak. I'm sure Lenovo is doing some exciting things. So tell our audience some of the exciting things that are, I mean, you already have outlined a lot of things, but just from that perspective, what is going on?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll split it into two parts. As you said, Lenovo is very focused on the consumer market. And so things like the Copilot Plus PCs, we're partnering closely with Qualcomm and Microsoft to bring those forward. We believe that's extremely important at the forefront of new ways of computing that can accelerate and enhance the experience of PCs in addition to the role they've historically played. Because we have a full portfolio that's also coming to phones, some of the most exciting things, we just had our Motorola Razr, so the foldable phone, the latest generation launch just last week in New York. And we're bringing AI features as well from generative AI onto the phone. And that's actually very exciting because we see the state of the art advancing where every year and every quarter, actually, the price performance and the power envelope of what we can do is rapidly advancing. And so there's full reason to believe we're just at the start of that, both on the personal device side and the consumer. So whether that's PCs, right, including laptops, as well as phones. If we switch to the business side, equally exciting because there are many developments happening around what we think of as building blocks and how do we put them together for our customers. I'll give you a couple of examples. Everyone knows what a phone looks like, but when we bring smart AI to the phone, it's really this concept around having a personal AI twin. Many people and many listeners are going to be familiar with having the digital twin concept, but really Lenovo is trying to move this forward with a personal AI twin concept, which builds on what a digital twin is. In the case of a consumer, whether it's your PC or your phone, you have some incredibly powerful compute. And at the same time, you now have the generative AI algorithms and the large language models to make interaction much better. And most importantly, you have a lot of the personal context, right? And so we see these coming together to form a personal AI twin where there's much more awareness both of where and how it's helping you in your daily life based on having access to the data that is permission properly from consumers of how you wanted to use it. So there's this notion of, oh, who am I working with? Oh, I'm Sanjay's phone. And so when you say something like, you know, tell me what's happening tomorrow at 3 p.m., it might know, hey, you have kids. It might know you have a dentist appointment. It'll be able to plug all those things together. And so that's going to be a fundamentally new experience on the consumer side. On the enterprise side, I'll just give a couple of examples. We do a lot of partnership with our extended ecosystem. So we partner with a company called Deep Brain AI in hospitality. And that's offering an end-to-end solution for generative AI virtual assistants that are paired with these large language models so that you can get more automated concierge services in hospitality and retail settings. Maybe if I flip over to internally, right, because it's also, Lenovo is also our own best customer, where we do a lot of what we call Lenovo Powers Lenovo. We're fundamentally reimagining the customer service experience for when we do support and manage the services. So we're really landing digital assistants, and we're landing chatbots, and we're landing instrumentation around having AI at each step of the journey. So that things that were taking perhaps, for example, 30, 40 minutes to summarize a case and get the knowledge base article out of it for future agents, that can now be done in 15 seconds and another 30 to 40 second review. So I don't want to go on too long, but I think we're confident and we're quite excited more than anything to see the range of cases that are emerging on the consumer side, as well as on the business side.
I have a ton of questions for you because that's so very exciting. So first question, Art, is Lenovo, does it have its own LLM or is it basically using external LLMs?
So this is a super good question that we spend a lot of time on internally because we found it's not necessarily a yes or no. I think it is true that, so what we are not doing, we are not going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to build our own foundation model. And I think at this point, there are very few companies in the world that have the capital and the time to be training those. But between that and what we use, there's a whole range of techniques around fine tuning, around prompting, around few-shot learning, around embedding, around RAG. So what we do is we will work with our partners to find what is the right foundation model that we do want to use. And then based on where we need to go, we will do different levels of either of training, we'll call it, or context embedding to be able to meet what I think of as the kind of cost and performance envelope that we have, right? Because we've typically worked backwards. No company will say, oh yes, we have $50 million. Let's go start training the foundation model. But there's a lot of things in between. And so we're constantly working at kind of this frontier of the best performance we can get for the right cost. And it's made kind of more dynamic by the fact that you see every quarter, every month, there's so much progress that we really have to stay at the cutting edge of, well, what are the techniques that we want to take to make an LLM appropriate for either the customer or our own situation that we want to use it in.
Yeah, the leaderboard keeps changing almost weekly on the performance of these LLMs. Art, just a follow-on on that, are you using just proprietary or are you open to using open source also?
Yeah, this is a mix. And I think this is also where, because I wear two hats as both the CIO, which is much more internally focused, but through Lenovo Powers Lenovo and also my delivery role with our solution and services, we're open to any of the above. And the reason we're open to that is a couple. The first is that technology is advancing so quickly. I don't think there's going to be an outcome. There's no indication that head and shoulders proprietary approaches open source is going to have a single answer anytime soon. And then secondly, because our customers are also extremely varied, they don't have a single want or requirement. And so we're very open to working with them, because often we are not going to be the one that dictate to our customers, you must use X, right? They're very open-minded. And sometimes they'll have a strong point of view about what it is that's required. And then finally, I think this is also very interesting because as we move forward and as technology advances, we're finding that it's very unlikely there's going to be one single LLM or model that does everything. And in fact, as people want better power usage, right? They want to be more targeted. We're seeing that there are A, more and more industry models. And then B, we're seeing that there are going to be, instead of LLMs, MLMs or SLMs, the medium and small language models that may be fit for purpose. We work across a variety of form factors. And sometimes in industrial situations, you can't have a large language model. You might have a medium language model that has more modest power requirements because you're running it at the far edge, where not everything is possible of having a trillion parameter model that you're constantly working on.
No, that's great. So let me ask you a question. Maybe you can give me the answer. Maybe it's proprietary. Is Lenovo working on a AI wearable?
On an AI wearable. So,
you know, like a pin. I don't know if you've seen some of the pin, the rabbit, etc.
Yeah, it's I don't have anything that we haven't disclosed publicly today, right? So one, okay. Thank you for the little bit of a commercial because we do have regular announcement and events for releasing. So I don't have anything new on the product side, but Sanjay, what you did hit on is very important, which is, I think one of the things that makes Gen AI so powerful is that it will start to drive real conversations and evolution about the user interface, right? This kind of, you have a window and you click around and you have applications. That is now a paradigm that has been around for many, many decades. And I think what we start to see now is, right, Lenovo's always had the point of view that the PC, it is not really personal computer, but it really should be personal computing. And that gives us the flexibility. Like you said, there's many new form factors now. What you really want to do is, right, you really want the computer to understand you and you want it to understand your intent. And if the technology with the context and the twinning, right, the personal AI twins gets good enough, you can imagine a world where it's mostly voice driven and it understands your intent and you have intelligent agents that can successfully execute those intents for you and complete tasks. So I think that is a lot of active research. While I don't have any product news that I can disclose today, that's not already public, but I think with our R&D labs, with our user engineering experience lab and our research labs around ethnography and how users use it, that is a very rich and fertile ground, right? Because I do think there will be evolution about how users can access and make computing much more personal.
You talked about the digital twin and you kind of alluded to the agents. Are you working on agents or what is your perspective? Because people are saying intelligent agents are basically one step away from AGI. So I want to understand what Lenovo's thoughts are on that.
Yeah, so intelligent agents are going to be very important because then I think of it as one of the next frontiers of what we're doing. So A, right, it'll absolutely be part of the landscape in general, because I think that's how you make it more functional, right? Chat is kind of the wave one implementation and a way to speak to it. But ultimately, I think people would like a modality where it's not only something that's providing some feedback to you, it's something that can get things done. And I think the instrumentation provided by intelligent agents will help take that next step. So, and we're seeing it show up, both in my CIO role internally, we are building agents that are making recommendations and helping, right? We think of them as kind of the digital twins or a digital analyst who can help on configuration. It might be an additional digital analyst who can help you on pricing. It might be kind of an additional digital paralegal who is helping you find precedent in cases, right? So there's that internal use case out of it where agents are already popping up where you say, well, here's a task for you that I'd like you to complete. Please come back with something. And then also with our customers, right? I think they're equally demanding and forward-thinking as we are. And I think they're also very eager to explore within this framework, how do we deploy agents, again, to provide more options? And are there different ways that we can be much more effective and efficient in how we work? So agents will absolutely be part of the landscape as extending the power of these foundation models and language models beyond just kind of interactive chat.
Well, that's great to know. Art, on your phones, is it going to be cloud-based AI or would you have them localized in a small form factor where they don't need to share the information like Apple is trying to do? What is your ideology philosophy on that?
Yeah, so if you look at our design philosophy, and I think there's a combination, because obviously the first and foremost is here you have to respect and what the user has authorized and permission you to go do, right? So if there is data that they do not want to go off the phone, right, that's going to be the first boundary, right? Respecting the privacy and the security and the integrity of the user data in ways that they can understand. So I think that's number one. So all of this is opt-in, right? I think part of it is awareness because I think unlike the previous generation before generative AI, when we were more focused around analytical AI, it was more of a, if I provide output, people will understand. But because generative AI, maybe you train on data, it gets embedded in ways you don't anticipate. And so I think it's important to be upfront with users. And then secondly, yes, there's absolutely an on-device part of the AI, right? And I talked earlier about how exciting it is. We are seeing that in the last 12 months alone, that the performance in terms of accuracy and power needed to generate answers and relevant content, it has gone up by an order of magnitude, meaning that the models that we're able to fit onto a phone are now as effective as models that were 10 times bigger a year ago. And so it starts with keeping the kind of, in this case, it's a small language model that's been tuned by Lenovo to be most responsive on phones for the most relevant tasks. So that's also part of our philosophy. We absolutely, for both for privacy reasons, but also for latency. When you are a user on a phone, if you are having to make a lot of round trips between your device and the cloud, that can actually be quite slow. And I think for anyone who's used any of the common consumer tools around generative AI, you see the inference is slow, right? You can see it kind of character by character, kind of like you're on a, like a console from the 80s. And that's just how it generates. So we're very cognizant of that. So Sandhya, to your point, starting with the user, right? It's whatever they want, right? And making sure they're comfortable with that. And B, we do provide kind of the core of the experience starts from having local inference with the context on the phone and only going to the cloud if you, A, users are comfortable with it, and we figure out that there's something where the model on the phone can't provide a good enough answer.
Well, that's pretty helpful. Art, you made a comment that how we interface with computers, you know, that box is going to change. Now, some of it has already started with, when you start looking at things like Perplexity and others, what are your thoughts on that? From what we understand, OpenAI is working on a search tool. Search is going to change how we, or maybe a chat box will become our primary interface with the computer or the our systems, or the agent will become. What are your thoughts and how are you positioning Lenovo to play in this completely changed world?
Yeah, well, Lenovo doesn't participate in search per se.
No.
But I do think the interesting point that will have to happen is, how did these technologies come together? Right? I think people are so excited. I think it gets lost that it is not an all-in-one technology. Right? It clearly has weaknesses that include latency. It includes inaccuracy / hallucination or confabulation, whatever the term that you want to use. And so I don't think it's the case that the existing paradigms go away. Right. Let me give you an example. And I think it's much more around given, because again, we're all business people. And I think of myself as a business technologist intersection. We're trying to get the right result for the best cost that we can do. And so as an example, one of the things we're overhauling is transforming our services journey and support experience. Well, as we talked about that, we're thinking, well, how much will it cost if I really want to open up a large language model and chat-based solutions based on Gen AI to our customers, right? And there's actually a huge swath of use cases where you don't want inference, where you don't want a language model, where it's actually better for pieces of data. For example, how do I do X on this kind of machine? You don't really need to think about it, right? You just say, please, right? We've heard this question 1,000 times before today. I don't need to generate it. So it'll be 100 times cheaper and 100 times faster on a cost to serve basis if I just tell you the answer via a database lookup and a query retrieval that says, Sanjay, you wanted to install some new memory on your laptop. Here's how to do it. And here are the 5 steps, because that's a common answer. And so I think that's a really great example where we don't need to actually have generative AI everywhere. I think it's a good complement to say where the existing solutions weren't good enough or, you know, couldn't be augmented, we should layer it in. But it's not that we should switch by default to everything. And I think that's true for search also. And I think it'll be interesting at the boundary, because you mentioned Perplexity, to say, okay, what are aspects of the search that could be augmented? But for things that we have extremely high confidence that are asked a million times a day, like why waste the compute to say, oh, let's go train a model and have it regenerate knowledge that's actually already well known and ready for retrieval. So I do see even internally technology teams sometimes losing sight of that. And I think we have to stay grounded to say, guys, customer outcome first, right? No one cares if it's, right? I think people, ultimately, the technology starts to, once it gets good enough, phase into the background. And people will just say, how do we get the best result from it?
Yeah. So, Art, we've talked about all the exciting things that AI can do. In your experience, what are some of the significant barriers to AI adoption that you have encountered internally and externally?
Well, I think we definitely see that the data readiness, right? We've done some research on this as Lenovo. We've just finished our third annual global study of CIOs, and 80% say that AI is going to have a significant impact, but a large swath of them feel that the functions aren't ready, right? The one is definitely around the technical skills. because it is so new, I think, how do you make sure that you're getting the most out of the technology is something that everyone is actively interrogating and looking to acquire those skills. The second part is really going to be around data readiness. I think even as exciting as the technology is, we will not, and I don't think we'll ever leave behind maturity around data management and governance, because the single most important thing about whether or not you can harness your enterprise's data or any data is whether it's got high quality and it's easily accessible in ways that are understandable across the enterprise. It sounds really basic, but again, people get tripped up because they're so excited about the new technology, they may have lost sight or forgotten about how important the data analytics and the core data quality is. And then the final piece that I'll talk about, because there's so many, but the top three, I would say is really the change management. Are you willing to transform the way that you work around that, right? Let's just take a very simple example around software engineering as you apply generative AI to it. As engineers go into it, their job actually totally changes, right? From actually thinking and looking up documentation to querying a base, understanding a code base, generating code, testing the code, prompting it. So the way software engineering works is going to be totally different in 3 to 5 years. And we're already at the start, at the front end of that. And it's still important there that you go into it with the right mindset, because it's like any other change. When done, if you neglect it or if you don't message it, people will get defensive and not want to embrace that, right? They think that AI is out for their jobs. And I think the much more proactive and positive way, or ultimately constructive way, is, well, how do we retool the various tasks and roles that compose our jobs so that they're more fulfilling and effective for the company, right? And so I think there's a win there that really needs to be proactively managed to help overcome some of that.
Yeah. So you basically said, Art, that obviously talent, skills, data management, and then finally change management. Those are some of the big, you see, the roadblocks. But there are concerns about AI bias and fairness. So how does Lenovo approach these issues, and what measures do you have in place to ensure ethical AI development, because for internally as well as when you're working with large clients?
Yeah, so I'll cover both of those in turn. Internally, this is one of the first things we've talked about, and we talk about it at the highest levels of the company, including at our board and our executive committee. So we've established the Responsible AI Committee and created 6 pillars for the practice, and those include the diversity and inclusion, privacy and security, the accountability and reliability, explainability is number 4, transparency is number 5, and then environmental and social impact. So it's both a practical governance structure as well as a signal to the company that says, hey, we're going to give you the flexibility, but we're going to have strong guidance about what you need to include around your practice of AI. And so within the company, we have that board and we flow that down into the execution. So whenever we launch a product, whenever we launch a solution, that's one of the checkpoints, which is, hey, not only is it secure, but if we're using AI and especially generative AI, are we asking the questions and having the conversations about how we're going to land our solution with respect to those pillars? And so that one, I think from the highest levels of the company down to each product and solution team and offering development team, right, we've totally overhauled our processes to make sure that is an explicit kind of process gate to make sure that those conversations are happening. And we're also working, because I think no company can do it alone. And because this is evolving, there's a lot of external and industry alliances. For example, we're committed to the UN, the UNESCO recommendation on the ethics of artificial intelligence program, right? We've joined in Canada, voluntary code of conduct on responsible development for advanced generative AI system. And so internally, and I think many other companies doing the same, we want to do this internally while keeping kind of one hand and one foot in the business world of what others are doing and doing it together, because I think there's a lot of shared learnings that can come out of it. For our customers, I think they have a wide variety of sets and they ask similar questions. And so we're helping organizations adopt and scale because we've added recently around AI specifically, advisory and professional services. And those range from helping companies discover what's out there, because there are companies that have said, I know it's out there, but I still haven't figured out exactly what it's for. So how do we find good, tangible outcomes? right? We've got some advisory services that help assess the actual technology. There are so many hundreds, I think even thousands of generative AI kind of tool companies, process companies, right? So we really help them assess the technology, people and processes and security. And then we also have services that help them get going. How do you actually start building and instantiating your vision? And finally, because Lenovo is also as part of the services and solutions group that I deliver for, and I run the delivery group, we're also helping companies deploy, manage, and or deploy and scale, as well as manage those longer term. So with customers, I think we want to take those practices around ethical AI and responsible AI, and we're doing it internally, and we're taking those learnings and making them available via our advisory and professional services for our customers, no matter where on the journey they are, right? And so they can land that knowledge and make sure they're practicing AI responsibly.
That's very helpful. Your six pillars and then across the board with the clients. Art, one of the questions that comes up with my discussions with the chief AI officers is, with all the great initiatives that you're doing, now you have internal and external facing responsibilities. How do you assess the tangible value or the ROI for some of these initiatives? Whether it's internally or maybe you're talking to your clients and they say, okay, do this for me, as you said, implement this, look at this, secure this. How are you analyzing ROI for these initiatives?
Yeah, so I think the first point is extremely important, which is I think it's necessary to separate value creation from bottom line saving, right? Because I think people get nervous if the first call that you, when you're thinking about generative AI, is from your CIO and they're asking, oh, can we just have your team? And people get extremely nervous about that. And so I think it's important to take a step back to say, let's create value first, and then we'll decide how we want to use the value, right? Because I think more typically, and as part of guiding the change management, it's much more constructive and reassuring to the teams to say, hey, we're going to create 20-30% of value, right? And then that's going to give us ability. Well, let me just use Lenovo as an example, right? The way we have it is, for example, in my support in our customer engagement center, where we have many thousands of agents working with customers, right? We'll take a bold goal. Hey, let's take this workload that all agents do and let's turn it into something that took case summarization. If Sanjay, you were to call and I were your agent, our internal practice is, after I solved your problem, I'm meant to take the time to write up that case to say, hey, how can I contribute to the knowledge base? That takes 15 to 30 minutes to do it right. Every agent has to do it. But in the future with generative AI, they can listen to the real life, the transcript, generate that summary basically in real time. And then I just need to spend a minute reviewing it and making some edits, right? So then we take something and it gets exciting because we make it tangible to say, hey, we took this case that is being repeated, right? Thousands, tens of thousands of times a day. It used to take half an hour. Now we're getting it done in 1 minute. That's a 30x increase for this repetitive task. And no one can deny that, right? And rather than saying, oh, well, now we only need 1/30th the number of agents, we say, well, that's value. Now, what does that help us do? For us, we've chosen to say, because we are growing double digits kind of every year, and we're on a double digit kind of quarter, year-to-year growth path, what that allows us to do is to say, hey, we're going to be able to take on scale much better than we ever could without this technology. And so rather than saying, oh, we're going to cut the team, what we say is this allows us to grow with the company and scale our expenses that in a way that contributes to profit. Right? And so I think the elements of there are, one, decouple value creation from cost savings, right? Because cost savings is just one way you can use the value created. And then secondly, you do need to be quantifiable. Right? Ultimately, you do need to say, what is this going to generate? It's not just to feel good or, hey, to say we did it. It will have to come down to outcomes. And then the third part is to pick something that opens eyebrows. When our CEO hears, wow, something that took 30 minutes is thousands and tens of thousands of times a day, now just takes a minute. That's exciting. 30x, that's something that gets people excited about it. So I think those are three elements that around both how to think about it, kind of quantify it, and also do a little bit of marketing around it so you can kind of get people excited and draw them in.
Yeah. So Art, is the same thing applies internally as well as to your clients too? Would you say that's the same thing?
Yes. And I think we encourage our clients to do the same, because I do think there's a risk where people have an investment overhang. And we see this already with some customers who perhaps were too eager and spent more money than they could productively deploy on generative AI. And now are asking, oh, where's the value? Right. And so I think it's really important to make sure you're keeping kind of the excitement in parallel with what the value you can realize coming out of it. And that's the beauty with Lenovo. That's also why I have two roles. By seeing both internally and externally, it's actually a really good bridge to help moderate and calibrate some of those discussions when I talk to customers, because that's often their first question, which is, what did you find internally? Right. And it's an incredibly powerful discussion to have.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Art, one of the purposes of this podcast is to democratize talent, AI talent. If everybody graduating from Stanford or MIT or any AI talent ends up at Google, DeepMind, et cetera, we'll never get the value of AI as it is. So we want the people who are listening to this show to really see, and they've heard from you, some of the cool things Lenovo is working on, and for them to hopefully apply to you for positions and jobs. So talk a little bit about the culture of innovation and experimentation that exists at Lenovo for our audience who are thinking of Lenovo as an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we recognize, because we've publicly committed and are on track to double our R&D investment in the next few years. So I think that's fundamentally a statement that, hey, technology is going to be at the forefront of this. Culture-wise, I think the good news is everyone in the company now really thinks about how everyone sees it coming. And I think, as to your point of democratization, I think we are really working on adding ways and on-ramps and hooks for any employee anywhere to grab on. Right? I think one of the things that's very powerful is that this natural language, it starts to unlock access to technology that previously you needed the IT team and a transformation team to go do. Right? We've now trained over a fifth of our employees. So around 12,000 employees have had training in large language models and AI and data analytics, right? These are the skills that are necessary, A, to partake. And then B, we have kind of a layered structure where, yes, we have like kind of central R&D labs and central kind of research labs across in each of the business groups and at corporate. And increasingly, we're providing an innovation architecture that's supported by modular pieces of technology that make it easier for people to apply generative AI, whatever their function or business group is, right? I think it's a little bit the analogy of maybe 5 years ago, low code, no code. I think AI is opening up a new kind of a frontier for that. And so I think the whole point here is we've taken the innovation architecture. We're starting to train people in mass, right? So really large chunks of the employee population are now enabled. We're providing them with kind of the accelerators and on-ramp so they can get on and be confident that they can do this. And we're making it a part of our culture, right? If you look at my screensaver, if you look at our awards, we're really trying to highlight people who are getting into this. Because I think the message here is, this is not a school thing per se, right? With how many courses there are in the online materials and podcasts such as yours, right? This is not a where you went to school. This is very much a learn by doing. Right? Ultimately, Sanjay, I think for you and your many listeners, the empowering message is, let me flip this around, right? I always laugh because people get so caught up on years of experience. Well, at least in the current incarnation, nobody has like 10 years of generative AI experience, really, right? At least in the, we'll call it 99.9% of people have their work yet and thinking about it in the last couple of years, aside from a very few people who are deep in it. So we were just at the starting line. And so this isn't a where you went to school or where you got credential. This is the, what have you been able to do with it that's really cool? And I think being in the enterprise provides that pull, ultimately that crucible to say, we're creating value, right? Was this something that was valuable for the company? And in my experience, whether it's internally as the Lenovo CIO or as a delivery officer for our services, what gets people excited is ultimately, hey, this is something that really helped change the business, right? This is something that really delivered a powerful outcome that we talk about.
One of the questions that came to us to ask of you, Art, was what kind of person that you look for when you're looking to hire? What kind of skills, backgrounds, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I think to the point here, it should come as no surprise, is somebody who is fundamentally, I'm looking for someone at the intersection. I think the triad is the intersection of someone who is fundamentally interested in kind of how business, technology, as well as company strategies come together. That's going to be the sweet spot for someone I'm looking at, because then you have to be curious. You have to be well-grounded to know enough about each of those to be credible. But it's really at the intersection where you have enough of those three things, where you're curious with an applied direction towards landing the technology. I think that's where the magic happens, right? Now, of course, different skill profiles, you may get heavier weightings. If I'm looking for an analyst, I'm going to be a little bit heavier on the business understanding and the industry understanding. If I'm on a technical architect, I'm going to weight heavier on deep depth with the various technologies. But fundamentally, I think those are kind of the, you think about a triad of skills and the intersection that I'm looking for. I think that would encapsulate it well.
But curiosity is a very important aspect, is what you're saying, Art.
Yeah, you have that. And not just curiosity, but I think an applied curiosity, right? Because it's not, where could this technology open up new frontiers for the business? Right? I think it goes together, not just, ooh, this is a really neat algorithm, which again, is it can be really cool, right? I'm a computer science person by major by training. I could get stuck in that all day, but I think ultimately it's the ability to bridge from, oh, this is a cool algorithm, or isn't that a cool compression technique, into, huh, what would that mean for this thing that I'm doing a million times a day? I think that's where the innovation happens.
Yeah. For our audience, Art, how does Lenovo stay ahead in this very fast pace of AI? As you know, there's multimodal, Sora, agents, et cetera. Do you have any collaborations with academic or research institutions or incubators or things of that nature?
Yes, all of the above. Right? To your point, I think any company that doesn't is just kidding themselves. But we have multiple research collaborations with leading universities in China and around the world. And also we have multiple ecosystem partners. We have a program called AI Incubators Program, AI Innovators Program, where we have hundreds of partners that we've worked with and identified in various parts of the ecosystem that are ready to be part of our solutioning, right, when we talk with customers. And so I think whether it's with academia, whether it's with startups, or whether it's with the largest companies, right? We talked about AIPC with Microsoft and Qualcomm, or working with NVIDIA about how do we help companies discover and articulate value propositions using the latest technology. And so the short answer is all of the above, right? And I think obviously Lenovo does technology for a living. So whether a company does that directly or works with partners to get access to that, right? I think it's absolutely necessary to cast a wide net when you're thinking about kind of the incoming technology funnel you want to consider.
Well, that's very, very helpful, Art. Art, generally, when you are obviously very busy, what is your typical workday like?
Typical workday? Well, I think here, this is actually...
This is from some other CAIOs who want to see how Art stays so productive. They want to know, your peers want to know.
So this one, if I may, Sanjay, I would say that I found for me, that's not the most helpful question. Right? For me, because I actually don't have a typical workday because I spend so much time on the road. And so the way I'd fund my calendar, because the reason I answered this way is that I try to make sure my time gets allocated to the most important strategic priorities on an ongoing basis, right? Because there's days where I may disappear for a week because we just came out of a strategy discussion and we need intense brainstorming and working through definitions and examples and getting the team started. And if you looked at my day, it's like, oh, Art just spent all day on enterprise AI twin strategy for like 5 days in a row, right? But that's not typical. So right, for me, part of the beauty of it is in a dynamic environment, there's no such thing as typical. I think part of what is necessary, a typical day in some sense kind of falls into this myth in my mind, maybe to be a bit heretical of, oh, if I just implement formula ABD and ABC, it'll just work. I've never found that to be the case, right? Because typical means you routinize something. And when you're dealing with something as dynamic and exciting as this, I think it's much more important to say, hey, am I constantly to the point of curiosity and learning? Am I on top of the key issues that are important for the technology as well as the company? And then I'll allocate my time accordingly.
Do you also, and I'm sure you do, allocate time for self-learning in this very, very fast-paced environment, Art?
Yes. And the point here that I think is what's been helpful for me is to try and be omnivorous about the information diet, right? Because if all you do is you're watching compression algorithms or right, explainability algorithms, then you do that, right? It gets very deep, but I think you have to have a broader base. And so I really try to supplement some of the IT and technology with other things. I personally, for me, that'll be around history, right? It'll be around kind of organizational psychology, right? There's some fiction there because right, you don't know where good ideas come from. Right? And often I find myself making connections from fields that might be totally unrelated, right? At least on the surface. So the answer is yes. But I think the way you do it also, I recommend kind of diversity or, you know, from an, like I said, information omnivore, right? You don't want to be just on the tech podcast all the time.
Don't tell that to our listeners. But anyway, so have diversity of opinions. That's very, very important. Art, finally, for our audience and especially for other chief AI officers or CEOs who are looking to establish a CIO role or AI capabilities, talk about some of the key lessons that you've learned in your journey and what advice would you give to them?
Yeah. So I think the first is clarity of purpose, right? Because even on something, especially for something like CIO, that's going to be a new role. But even for something like CIO or CTO, those things can be vastly different things at different companies. So no matter where you're coming from as a leadership team or as a CEO, clarity of purpose, what do you need from your CIO at a particular point? Some companies may find it's really about innovation, right? Some companies may find it's really about governance and security aspect. Other companies may find, oh, I really want a deep technology to unlock and help communicate what is the art of the possible within the organization. So I think that's the first one. The second one is making sure that you tackle some of these narratives, right? Fundamentally, one of the most important ones is what's the future of work, right? And what's your perspective on that? I think you can have someone doing a lot of work in this space, especially a CAIO around that without a key kind of an opinion that he or she is willing to share with the organization. And I think that does a massive, and that's a pretty massive job, right? Because a lot of people have a question mark or will be looking at these initiatives with at least some level of trepidation, right? And then finally, I think building the organizational capacity, right? We can lean on the past 10 years of working analytical AI. I do think there's a lot of muscles that can be used or reused and strengthened this generative AI journey, but there's going to be some adaptations that need to happen as it evolves. And so I think making sure you're aware, right, of where the company is from a maturity perspective to have a more tailored work plan, so to speak, for the CIO is important.
Well, that's fantastic. Clarity of purpose, making sure you use existing analytical capabilities and a good team. I think those are great lessons. Art, there are like 50 other questions I have and I could go on, but you have projects to do. You have interesting products to ship, and I would love to buy some of them. So it's been really a pleasure to have you on the CIO podcast. Your insights into the world of AI and the transformative work that you're doing at Lenovo are truly inspiring. And thank you for sharing your expertise with our audience today. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stay connected with us for more conversations with leading AI experts. Until next time, this is Sanjay Puri signing off from the CIO podcast. Art, just fantastic. We'd love to have you back again because so much more we want to know. But thanks again for being on the podcast.
No, my pleasure. I think this podcast is an important part of the ecosystem and it's great work you're doing here. Thank you, Sanjay.
Thank you.